Welcome back to season four of the FASD Family Life Podcast. This is the only show about FASD hosted by an FASD specialist and a parent with 30 years lived experience. I'm Robbie Seal, your host and mom to five incredible kids, including three teens diagnosed with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. As an FASD specialist, it is my passion to help families thrive. To learn more about me and my work, check out my website, FASDfamilylife.ca. I started this podcast to be the friend I wished I had when my kids were young and to bring hope to weary parents. I wanted to share what I've learned in working in residential treatment and raising my own children impacted by trauma and prenatal alcohol exposure. I pour my heart, soul, and hundreds of unpaid hours into the production of the FASD Family Life podcast. And all that hard work's paying off. Since 2021, the podcast has grown to nearly 45,000 downloads worldwide. But I need your help to keep going and growing. Consider becoming a monthly sponsor. Your gift of $20 per month would enable me to keep sharing hope and teach the skills needed to reduce stress and improve the lives of people with FASD and the families who love them. And I've made it easy. There's a link in the show notes that says support the show. Today in this episode, I have a special guest with me. I found her as a resource when I was browsing through LinkedIn, and I was so excited about the work she's doing. I reached out to her right away. And this is my new friend from Western Australia.
Thank you so much, Robbie, to have me on and talk with your families. My name's Holly Ann, and I run a company called Safe for Kids here in Western Australia. In fact, I teach all over Australia. I teach a child abuse prevention program, and the post that I shared was how I did a workshop for grandparents that were bringing up their grandbabies. And I just have such an affiliate with, you know, parents that are bringing up their grandbabies, because it is so difficult because they didn't grow up with the internet. I teach abuse prevention program called Protective Education. And I actually got into that because I was working at a special school with children with special needs 35 years ago. And I was at a school where there was a critical incident of a volunteer bus aide who was also a foster carer, unfortunately, was abusing kids on the bus and his foster children. So our school was one of the first schools trained in a program called Protective Behaviours at the time. And so for 25 years, I'd always taught it to the children that I'd worked with. But then in 2007, I went up into two remote Aboriginal communities here in WA in my long service leave, and just saw a huge need for resources. So I quit my job, took out a $250,000 loan out of my home to produce the resources, and have been doing it full-time ever since.
My goodness, the leap you took. You saw a need and you just thought, I've got to walk into that. I have to step into that gap. I respect you for that. I respect people and they do it.
As have you have.
Well, yeah, I have. And I'm proud of myself that I have, but I'm also thrilled when I meet other people who they see a need and they step into the gap, whatever that might be. And so you've brought your training of and keeping children safe, and it's related to the internet, but it relates to more than that too. And you brought that to your remote communities. This training that you were doing for the grandparents in these Aboriginal communities who are raising their grandbabies with respect to internet safety, sexual safety, all the sort of things. So I'd love to learn more about that from you.
So the program's called Protective Education now because when it came to Australia in the late 80s in the place of stranger danger, because we know only about 10% is by a stranger, 90% is by somebody that's known and possibly loved by the child. So I've created all these resources and written children's books because it's not just the program is based on a 10-week lesson plan that I've written for childcare centres, because I believe that we need to start abuse prevention education from 3 at the latest, and we need to talk to children about pornography from 6 at the latest. Of course, when I say that to parents and grandparents, they're horrified, and as we're going through, I'll explain why I say that. But it's basically about giving kids a language. Now, it's not, please, I don't want your listeners to think it's children's jobs to keep themselves safe, because it is not. It is our jobs. But for me, children need to be the last line of defense. So we teach the children lots of different aspects. Like, it's based on the UN rights of the child. So we teach everyone has the right to feel safe all of the time. I just teach the children this for safe and this for unsafe. And it's such a simple tool, but every time I say either word, I always do it. And then if a parent's out somewhere and their child's doing something they're really not happy about, they just go like that and the kid's going to know, wait to get in the car. Or it could be family are at a picnic and there's some other kids that want the child to go off and play, but your child doesn't want to go. They can just come up and go, Mum or Dad, really subtly, oh, no, we're busy, they can't come. Another thing we teach the children is something called their early warning signs. I bet all your listeners have had the experience where somebody stand next to them in a crowd and they go, ooh, there's something about them that just creeps me out. As adults, we would call it intuition or gut feeling or a sixth sense. But with children, we explain that it's called early warning signs, and they can tell us how animals show their early warning signs. All children know that snails and turtles go into their shell and that squids and octopuses squirt ink. Fortunately, we don't have these in Australia, but even Australian kids know that skunks squirt out stinky, farty, smelly stuff. Then we help them set up a safety team of five adults that they can talk to if they feel unsafe. And the way that that works is we have five people on our safety team. So if the first person doesn't listen, you have to tell the next one and you keep telling. But how I teach it to children is on the thumb would be anybody from their home, from where they sleep. On the next two fingers would be two people from daycare or two people from school, wherever they spend, you know, most of their time. And then on the last two fingers are external people. So I call them people from the community. So they can be aunts and uncles, grandparents, next door neighbours, people from church, after school activities. If children are being fostered, then it might be their biological parent or their caseworker. But what we're trying to do is give kids a wider spread of different people from different parts of the community. Then the next lesson is about persistence and keep telling. After that, we follow that up by teaching children about their private body parts. And I teach public and private as a whole concept rather than just focusing on your body parts. And this isn't probably the Canadian sign language, but it just makes sense to kids because public means people around and the sign for private is your hand in front of your mouth because your mouth is a private part and sometimes what you say can be private. So it's flat hand, turn the key, just in case people are listening on the podcast.
Okay.
And then we go through public and private rooms and places, things that you do with your body that's private, clothing, and then we finally name the body parts. And I call them either home names or street names. And we brainstorm all the cutesy names that, you know, Willie and Dick and things like that. And I say, yep, they're okay. But a doctor would call it a penis. The dictionary calls it a penis. And in English, it's a penis because a lot of the remote communities I work in, of course, Aboriginal kids, there's so many Aboriginal dialects here. Yes, you need to know what it is in your language. But white doctors, for instance, don't know language. And so it's not a judgment thing. Then we talk about, you know, safe and unsafe secrets. So it's a holistic program. But when I'm doing the public and private lesson is where I talk to children about pornography. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned earlier that I believe that we need to start this from six at the latest. I don't call it pornography with six-year-olds. We call them private pictures and private movies. But when I brainstorm with children, where could kids see pictures or movies of people with no clothes on? Five-year-olds can tell me YouTube's first, TikTok's usually second, and then it's Netflix, you know, Facebook, iPhones, iPads. They know it all. I don't have to put the words in their mouths. Now, ironically, a lot of children may have in their own homes, the parents might have filtering systems. But one of the things kids say is at the grandparents' house. You know, Nan and Pop might not have the filtering. So kids, you know, sneak their iPads and then get to watch it there. And then I even had a child say once, on an aeroplane, miss. And I've gone, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess you're right. A week later, I happened to be on a plane sitting next to a bloke who was watching Game of Thrones first season. I thought, that kid was right.
Yeah, because some of the TV and movies can be very graphic and certainly not appropriate for children. And sometimes you see things in circumstances you wouldn't mean to. Miss, I would say a minivan. I was driving along and another vehicle had their DVD playing, and I could see that there was pornography playing on the screen in the other vehicle. So, you know, you can do your due diligence, but our kids see things even when we don't want them to see things.
And if I had a dollar for every parent that said, Holly, you know, my kids don't go on iPads and they don't have technology, and my kid would never look at pornography, it's not a case of if, it's when your child sees it. Because, yes, your child might not have it in your home, but they're still part of the community. They, you know, the kid across the road's got it. The kid on the bus will show them. I'm doing some resources at the moment trying to talk more about grooming, both online and face-to-face grooming. So I met with the police here in Perth just after Christmas, and one of the senior female police officers was telling me how her six-year-old came home from school on a Friday and said, Mummy, a little boy at school in my class said, when you're a grown-up, you have to kiss a girl on the fanny. And the whole class had gone, oh, that's gross. Don't be disgusting. You're sick. So on Monday, he brought Mummy's phone to school and showed the whole class. She goes to school on the Tuesday and says to the principal, what's going on? This is what's happened. And he said, oh, I can't control what children bring to school. And so, you know, I don't put the words in children's mouths. Five-year-olds tell me, I had a little girl 5 years of age say Snapchat. And I said, sweetie, you're five. How do you know about Snapchat? Oh, my 14-year-old sister's using it. Obviously for sending nudes, because how did a five-year-old know about that? And then I was in a very affluent area and a young girl put up and it's easy, Holly. You just ask Siri.
Who would have thought? Holly, I'm 54. I wouldn't have thought that, right? And how about all the grandparents who are raising children? Or, you know, if you're in a very conservative family, you wouldn't be thinking about these things, but really it is everywhere. And just in case my listeners think it's only Aussies, it's not. My sweet little seven-year-old came home from school one day and you know what she said? Mommy, do you know what a blowjob is? And she told me. And Holly Ann, I could tell you, I wasn't quite ready to have that conversation with a seven-year-old, but there I was and I had to.
Yeah. I'm glad that you brought that up, because one of the things I'm going to share with you is this free book that we get here in WA. Your listeners or viewers can get, I'll give you the link to download this for free. It's a book called Talk Soon, Talk Often. And it was written by our health department, but it teaches children at what it's age appropriate. So this is what you teach them about sex when they're two, when they're four, and it's in increments. Because here in Australia, if you were a parent driving your child to school at 8:30 in the morning, over the radio would come, do you suffer from erectile dysfunction? And then a little voice from the back goes, Mum, what's erectile dysfunction? And mums will be going, oh, I don't know, ask your father. How many of your listeners would feel comfortable to say it's when a man's penis won't go hard? Because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. You don't want them Googling erectile dysfunction.
Well, and so that's what happens. If our kids don't feel like they can ask us, they Google.
Yeah.
And my friends, please believe me, your kids are Googling and they're finding things. Didn't you tell me it was a little Aborigines boy who told you that you just have to Google XXX?
Yes.
So, I mean, it's my friends, we do need to pay attention to this, even if we would prefer to be the ostrich with our head firmly planted in the sand. We can't afford to be.
No. And so one of the big things about our program also is teaching children about consent, because my favorite group of children to work with is 14-year-old young men. I love them because they don't have a filter.
I'll send you mine. You love them. Sorry? I'll send you mine.
14-year-old young women, on the other hand, I'd rather talk to, you know, 400 men in prison than 20-year-9 girls, because they frighten the dickens out of me. They're surly and snarly and they can be a bit, you know, it's difficult being a teenage girl. Anyway, I when I talk to them, one of the things that our program's based around two things. We all have the right to feel safe and we can talk to someone about anything. And I've got this orange poster that I put up that says we can talk about anything. And, of course, teenage boys want to talk about sex. And so they tell me they're watching 2 hours a week of pornography. Now, if they're going to admit to that, to the old lady out the front, they're watching way more. They're just dumbing it down. And when I say, fellas, why would you look at that? Oh, Holly, to learn technique, to learn style. Let me stop you there. Not the right technique, and there's no style, but there's no kissing, there's no foreplay, there's no pleasure for women. 88% of pornography that is produced is violence against women. And we wonder why, you know, domestic violence here, I'm sure it is in where you are and your listeners are, is on the increase.
It is.
You know, choking and things like that. It's all a learned behavior. And there's a certain sex act that you need a lot of consent around that all of our teens think that's totally normal and everybody wants that. So we really have to. I cop a lot of flack on my Safe for Kids Facebook page because whenever I talk about consent, I always get these wackadoodles that, oh, you're a pedophile and calling me all these names. You're sick. Do not talk to three-year-olds about consent. Consent's got nothing to do with sex. Consent's about body autonomy. They're the boss of their body and nobody should be touching them without their consent. How's that sick?
No, I totally agree. And I started that with my children when they were little. If I was wrestling with them and they wanted to stop, we stopped. If we were playing that tickle game, but they said stop, I stopped. Because I wanted my kids to know that their voice mattered. They had body autonomy. So,
beautiful.
You know, they didn't have to go hug somebody they didn't want to hug or, you know, anything like that. But also, yeah, no, this is your body and you need to know that you have a right to be safe in your body.
And also we need to hear, we need to teach children how to hear no.
Yes.
Because, you know, I know even my husband, you know, I do a lot of work away. And when I get home, I'm really tired and he'll tap me on the shoulder and say, Holly, you know, and I'm, maybe tomorrow I'm just, you know, I've just got off a plane. I'm really exhausted. And, you know, he's a bit affronted. So we've got to teach, I'm not rejecting you. It's just not a good time at the moment.
Yes.
And not to be upset by that. You know, it's not a rejection. It just might not be a right time. Or you're not allowed a humbug. Aboriginal people use this great word called humbugging, which is, or they use it in the place of nagging.
Okay.
And they, you know, they'll say, come on, give me a cigarette. Come on, give me a cigarette. And so it's really a cute word. And I use it all the time because I just love it. But, you know, you can't pressure somebody, you can't bribe somebody to consent. So consent's quite a complex concept that we have to teach, all the nuances that go around it. But let me just, if I can, just explain to your listeners how I talk to six-year-olds about pornography, because I don't come at it from a religious, a moralistic, a values. I come at it from science. Because that's not judgmental. And so we've got to get away from it being your rude parts or rude pictures or bad pictures. I call them just private pictures because it's a concept like on and under. And so I've written a children's book that I've written five, but two to help adults talk about porn. So this one, I pretend that it's an iPad with the children. And I say, I'm going to type in fairies, but a picture of a lady with no clothes on and big fairy wings comes up. What should I do about that? And I had a dear little boy put up his hand and said, well, miss, I'd type in fairies with clothes on.
Problem solved.
Yeah, it's not that easy, son. And so I explain to them, and I do brain science with them. I explain you need to flip it over and you need to go and show an adult what you saw. Now, I used to say go and tell an adult until I had a situation where I'll never forget it because we'd just gone into lockdown here in Australia and I was in my office and somebody had sent me a message, Instagram, and I get messages all the time. So I just open up this random message, but somebody had seen very graphic child exploitation material and didn't know how to handle it. So they've put at Safe for Kids, which is me, at FBI, at Centre for Missing and Exploited Children, which is where it will go eventually. And so I could not believe what I was seeing. I burst into tears. I'm sobbing. But I still had enough wherewithal to go, right, I need to take a screenshot of his face, but not what he was doing, a screenshot of his account. I go back out to take a screenshot of who had sent it to me, but it had already disappeared. And then I go onto our federal police's website to make a report about it. and I'm crying and I'm, oh, and by the way, I've got photos. I hit send. I then go up into our house because my office is in the bottom of our garden, and I tell my husband exactly what I saw through my tears. And I finally finish my story and he goes, oh, yeah. What do you mean? Oh, yeah. I'm a basket case and all you're giving me is, oh, yeah. Now, I still have flashbacks about that. That happened over 2 years ago. But about every 6 weeks or so, that picture will just pop into my mind and I just burst into tears. I now see it as a gift because as horrible as it was for me, if I can't articulate to my husband what I saw, how is a child supposed to tell a grown-up? Now, most children will not tell a grown-up if they see it for fear of getting into trouble or having the adult take the device away. And children are describing flashbacks and having nightmares. And I had a counsellor from Sydney contact me. I'm in Western Australia, so the other side of Australia, was looking for some resources about something else. And they said, oh, look, Holly, I've got you on the phone. Can I run this past you? I'm seeing a young 10-year-old at the moment who will not go to sleep at night. I've had 5 sessions with her. She just will not go to sleep. She'll just stay awake as long as she possibly can. And then at 2 or 3 o'clock, she just crashes because she's just so exhausted, but she won't close her eyes. They said, I've spoken to all of my colleagues. Nobody can help me. Can you? I said, easy, easy. Ask if she's seen pictures or moves with people with no clothes on. They've gone, oh my gosh, how did you know? Because they rang me back and they said, I've spoken to every one of my colleagues and it's not on our radar. Nobody came up with that. So this is why we have to have these conversations. So what I do with 6-year-olds is once we've brainstormed where they might see them, I explain to them, our brains are amazing. And in our brain, it's made up of millions and millions of connections. So I put all my fingertips together. And I say, if you see pictures or movies, however, it changes the connections in your brain. So I turn one hand over to get them to understand it. And I explain, you know how we have to put healthy food into our body to grow up big and strong? We need to put healthy pictures into our mind to grow up big and strong. But seeing pictures or movies with people with no clothes on is not healthy for your brain. It releases a chemical in your brain called dopamine. So if I'm running around, my brain will create a little bit of dopamine to say, hey, Holly, keep running around. Or if I eat chocolate, a little bit of dopamine to say, hey, Holly, have another chocolate. But if I see pictures or moves with people no clothes on, it's like a flood of this dopamine in your brain and your brain loves it, but it's not healthy for your brain. And even if you go, oh, that's gross, it tricks your brain into going and looking at more and more. Now, a lot of people get really angry when I say that I talk to 6-year-olds about it and they say, oh, you're just going to turn them onto it. Well, we're not making it sound attractive. We're not saying, hey, go and check out this bad boy. Because it's not a case of if. And also, we have so much data nowadays, like Holland has got the lowest teenage pregnancy rates in the world because they teach sex education from this big.
Mm.
And if you don't talk about it, like teach abstinence, that's where you've got the higher rates of teen pregnancy sort of thing. So it's not a case of, like I said before, if it's when. And so when we do it in an age-appropriate way, with teenagers I actually go into, you know, the other chemicals that's released, the oxytocin and serotonin, the connections. So because we've got 17-year-olds with erectile dysfunction and that's how much it's changing the brain. And then the children that your listeners will be, you know, parenting, you know, their brains are already, you know.
Vulnerable, very vulnerable.
Perfect, exact. Yeah, perfect word for it. And so, you know, they're also, because of the impulse control, they may see it and they want to show everybody else what they've seen or what they know about.
Yeah.
And I relate it back to when children believed in Father Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always that one kid in the class that wanted to tell everybody, there's no such thing as Father Christmas. There's going to be that child, and I would hate it to be your listener's child, because then they get targeted and labelled as, you know, a perpetrator or this or that or the other, when they're just vulnerable children. And so the other thing is with the grandparents that I was talking with recently, because they haven't parented with technology. They didn't grow up with it. I saw one young seven-year-old boy. His grandmother made him sit down with the group and everything, and he was swearing at her and, oh, you effing, see, give me your iPhone. And he just had this tantrum. Now, he didn't have FASD, but, you know, the trauma because he's being, you know, brought up by his grandparents, you know, she said, oh, I'm going to take him home. No, he's staying. Mm-hmm. He needs it more than every kid here. By the end of it, I did 2 hours with each of the different groups. By the end of it, he didn't want to leave. He was, can't I stay with Holly, Granny? I want to listen to more of this sort of thing. It was so beautiful. But she was just so embarrassed about, you know, luckily for me, it's not my first dance and I've seen lots of worse behaviours. But, you know, children that are vulnerable, they're the people that people prey on. Yes. And the other area that, you know, a lot of your families will be dealing with is children with problematic gaming disorder.
Yes.
You know, we're not allowed to call it porn addiction or gaming addiction, but that's the language children use with me. And so, you know, it's the same with the dopamine, with the problematic gaming disorder. And so, you know, I don't envy your families because they're, you know, there's so much that they need to be aware of. And, you know, many of your family, their children will be playing Fortnite, Minecraft or Roblox. Here in Australia, online grooming of children in the last 2 years is up 122%. And I can't think that we are an island, but I can't imagine it's any different, the stats in where you are.
Yeah, I'm in Canada and I would presume that the stats are very much the same. And I would imagine that certainly all of our, many, many of our kids, most of our kids are online in one format or another. Even if we do limit it, they still are online. And like you said, if they go to the neighbor's house or their friends, their cousin, granny and gramps, who knows, they are likely online. And then if they're gaming, well, predators know where to find children. And predators know how to groom children, how to hook them in. And yeah, my son thinks that if there's a 14-year-old talking to him on a game, that it's a 14-year-old. And because of his fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, understanding reality versus fantasy or understanding things that are not concrete right before him, very challenging, very challenging. So we have to have a lot of diligence and yet I think it's valuable that our kids have some time gaming. That way they have some social currency. They can talk with the other kids, but so we have to provide it in as safe as way as possible. And what I was going to say is with COVID, with kids being home even more on their devices, even more, so are the predators. So let's exactly. talk about this parenting course that you offer. I'd like to know more about that, Holly.
So I have it's a 2-hour online course. And I made it because I do a lot of face-to-face training, but I was finding mums were coming along to that and going, I wish my husband had to come along too. So I produced this online course and there was a cost to it, but I'd be happy to share the link with you if your families would like to know about it. The idea is it's a 2 hours, but it's not a straight 2 hours. And it also has a copy of my parent handbook as a PDF as part of it. But the idea is that mum and dad or grandparents, whoever are looking after children, can sit down together and watch it. Or even I'm happy if people want to have a group of girlfriends over and have a morning tea and just sit down. But they're just little videos. So I think the longest is 11 minutes and that's the public and private lesson, which is quite complex. But they're just bite-sized videos just to give parents the language to be able to talk with their children about all this sort of stuff. And so, if you'd like it, I'll send you the link in the show notes along with a lot of other free resources. I've just made a song for children in remote communities where they talk about, I don't call it grooming with Aboriginal children because English is their second language. They would think brushing your hair.
Yes.
We call it friending them up. And it talks about the red flags and things like that. So I'll give you that link too. So your families can sit down with the children and show them that because it is complex.
It's prolific. I'm sure I unaware of how prolific it is. I mean, and our kids are so vulnerable. All kids are, because, you know, hopefully the people in their lives, most of the people in their lives are trustworthy. So therefore they trust people, but the world isn't that way. We need to be careful. You know, people who want to do harm can be very sophisticated. So we need to be really aware. And I really do like that term, friending them up, because that's a lot more tangible, a lot more understandable to a young person, even if English is their first language, because we think of grooming as brushing your hair, brushing your teeth, all that sort of thing. So friending them up is, I think, even more relatable term. So well done, Holly. Thank you for that. As we wrap up this conversation, I just want to say thank you for being this wealth of resources. You've been in this community of teaching children with special needs for like 35 years. Now you're working with children that are vulnerable and just parents and grandparents to help them know how to keep their kids safe. And I think having the right language is more than half the battle. Because if we know what we need to say, we have the right language, that calms down our own anxiety. It gives us the tools we need to be able to protect our kids. So I love this. And there's so much more to learn from you. So I'll have you back again another time, because there's a whole color code system that we won't talk about today, but I thought was fascinating. So that'll be a conversation for another day. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Are you looking for a community of support? You've heard me say it so many times. We need our tribe. If you need your tribe, I encourage you to join the FASD Family Life Community. Together, we will deepen our understanding of FASD and build a community of support with parents who understand. The FASD Family Life Community Support Group meets on the third Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, and I hope to see you there. You can subscribe today for only $10 a month at fasdfamilylife.ca. Thank you for spending your time with me. I know it's precious. And until next week, remember, the struggle is real, and so is success. I'll speak with you soon.